You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Hello and welcome to the cycling podcast Femina. My name is Rose Manley and today we're going to be reviewing the cobbled classics. Can you believe that they're done and dusted? Very dusted, very dusty, should I say, actually. Already, luckily, I've got a couple of old cobbles to help me discuss. Yeah, all that happened. Denny Gray of the British Continental. How's that for an intro, Denny? I know we've been really building up your intros as we've gone on.
I love that. It feels like you've been working on that all week and just you couldn't wait to deliver that one.
I know, I did actually have to restart the start there because I was so determined to call you a couple of old cobbles. How sad is that? My other old cobble, of course, Orla Shen, are we lovely to have you back, Orla?
Oh, it's lovely to be cobbling with you both. Despite that insult, Rose, I'd actually been about to issue a compliment.
Oh.
Because when we started recording, your voice came across as this consummate, calm professional. When we've been faffing with technology for about 25 minutes now, the air's been going blue, my end anyway, getting increasingly frustrated. Then we press the record button. Hello, welcome to Cycling Podcast Femina. I thought, wow,
where did that come from?
I like it.
Well, we should also say that we have an additional contributor who might not say too much, but might make an appearance. And that's Bella the dog, Orla.
Yes, Bella's here, demanding my attention. So I'm now petting her furiously because she's also been barking as we've been trying to do the get the technology sorted. So she may want her voice heard. Bella, what did you think of the Cobble Classics? She's been stunned into silence. Wonderful.
I don't know that. Maybe she was, I can just imagine her little doggy jaw dropping. Maybe it was like, wow, that was just, it was so impressive. I can only assume
it was
that.
It up.
Because it certainly wasn't boring, was it? I mean, it was, are we going to get on a little bit later to talking about, you know, our specific favourite moments and biggest surprises and biggest heroes of the cobbles. But it was just like, it has been a sensational season. I think the women's cycling has shown so a lot more variety than the men's, dare I say, as well. But it's been, you know, full of different teams kind of rising to the challenge. Denny, I mean, I'm not going to get you to say your favourite moments, but just broadly, you know, what did you make of the Cobble Classics?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get drawn into hyperbole, isn't it? But I think it was a real classic season because, as you say, Rose, there was a lot of tension in all the races. Many of the races, most of the races went down to the wire, and it wasn't just an SD Works show all the way. We had the rise of Lidl-Trek, but also Marianne Vos coming back, and I'm sure these are all threads we'll pick up on as we unpick the classic season. But I think it was offered really exciting viewing and a real contrast to what we were seeing on the men's side of things as well.
All I can only imagine in the studio, you were weeping and whooping and all of it. Because there was so much to get, you know, get stuck into, wasn't there?
I mean, I almost broke my ankle at one stage. I was jumping up and down two-footed on stilettos, which probably isn't a great idea. But it was really magnificent, actually. And I feel like it gave us everything any sports fan could hope for, because it gave us Jeopardy, it gave us competition right to the very end, it gave us a variety of winners and a variety of winning teams and a variety of winning strategies. It was bloody brilliant, actually. And I feel like I don't want to frame this in reference to men's racing. I don't, but I've said that as a caveat because I'm obviously about to. When we get the chance to watch races back to back, as we did with Flanders, for example, I feel really grateful that we have women's racing, because one of the things we talk about men's racing a lot is how we're living in this golden era. And I think we very much are, when the golden era top dogs are racing against each other. When they're not, it's very obvious that there's this huge discrepancy. And I was a bit worried in women's racing that we had that discrepancy almost being consolidated and solidified by SD Works rather than any one particular rider, but a team. And we don't. I very much feel that right now we live in a golden era of women's racing, whereby the dynamic and the storylines, I feel, over this season to come and the next couple of seasons are actually now really quite unpredictable. And the level of everybody has raised so much. We've such strength and depth now in every race. It's a joy to behold and it's a privilege to watch.
I know, I'm just so relieved to not have to spend every episode saying, how do we beat SD Works? Which I think for the almost past however many seasons it's like, well, what could we talk about without talking about SD Works? Like, oh, we can't really talk about anything. So, you know, it's such a relief to, you know, have all these storylines and so many young riders, which I think we'll come on to a bit later, or new riders at least that we weren't expecting to see up there in the cobbles. But also, Ollie, you've offered me a great little segue into introducing what will be our feature that will be coming up at the end of the show, which will be looking at, it's the 20 years of Flanders. So there's been 21 editions, actually, but the first edition was back in 2004. I wanted to go back and kind of find some of the stories that made those early editions, because we don't ever hear about them. In men's cycling, people talk about things like, you know, Fausto Coppi and things that happened before they were even alive, probably before even some people's grandparents were alive, some of the things that people talk about. So trying to create a bit of a story about the history of that race for the women's peloton. And so I was talking to riders and journalists. So speaking to riders like Lois Gunawick and Anoni Wood, and talking to journalists who were there. So that's coming up towards the end of the show.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
We're so lucky to follow a sport that transports us to so many varied countries and terrains. It may even have inspired you to take a trip to one of cycling's very many heartlands. And perhaps you want to fully throw yourself into a place without scrabbling around for phrase books and clunky apps, or paying a fortune in private lessons. That's where Babbel comes in. How about frites and beer on the side of the Quermont? Dutch would be handy. A trip to the Ligurian coast with espresso in hand to watch the Giro in full swing? Italian is your friend. Or grabbing the biggest cowbell you can find and heading for the Alps for when the tour comes through. Then French it is, mon ami. Babbel teaches you languages for real-life conversations. It includes the Everyday Conversations feature, which is specially designed to help you expand your vocabulary and build your confidence in speaking. Plus, Babbel's advanced speech recognition helps you improve your pronunciation, so you won't be misunderstood when it comes to ordering your third helping of cassoulet or that cheeky cappuccino after 11 a.m. Babbel is available as an app or online, so you can have it with you whether at home or on the go, and it offers personal guidance to keep you motivated. So there's no time like the present, especially when right now Babbel is offering our listeners 6 months free with a purchase of a 6 month subscription with promo code CYCLE24. Go to babbel.com/play and use promo code CYCLE24 for an extra 6 months free. That's BABBEL.com/play, promo code CYCLE24. Babbel, your guaranteed path towards speaking a new language. Well, I set us all the task. I've actually even almost forgotten my own task, but that was to come up with our moment of the Cobble Classics, our hero of the Cobble Classics, and a surprise of the Cobble Classics. And I don't want anyone to mention Omloop anymore. I'm done with defending my little trek, got it wrong at Omloop. Taxi, but I feel like I've had to defend it in every arrive since and every episode since. No, I'm not really vetoing.
Oh, that was going to be my moment, Rose. That was going to be my moment of the season. Genuinely, it actually was.
Well, I'll
pivot.
I will. I'll eat some humble pie that I haven't even admitted to eating yet, because I've still been going strong on the defence of my own mistake. But yes, I will let you have it. So, well, why don't we start with our moment of the Cobble? We'll go to Bella the dog first. What's Bella saying, Orla, about her moment of the Cobble Classics?
Bella is saying, why are you not paying attention to me? Why are you talking about cycling again? I want to go out and enjoy the sunshine.
To be honest, we're all feeling that, Orla, aren't we?
When it comes to moment of the Cobble Classics, is that what we're starting with? Well, my moment was actually, and there is definitely recency bias involved here, but I did almost, in very typical fashion, cry when our cameras were on Fife for Georgie in the velodrome at the end of Pyra Bay, and she realised that she'd finished in the podium, and it's making me emotional even now talking about it. I thought it was the most beautiful, magical moment And I'm so grateful that we had cameras on it, because I think so often it's really easy for us who've never ridden a Paris-Roubaix or a bike race in my case, to question the happiness and the achievement of anyone on a podium that's not won a bike race. It is so important that we remember how much this means and how hard it is. I think Paris-Roubaix is easier to understand that. Unless, of course, you just watched Elisa Balsamo's devastated face at finishing second, which again, I completely understand. And I think she'll feel a lot better about that during the week. But it's so beautiful to see that delight and shock and joy and moment of achievement with Fight for Georgie. Because if she'd realised when she finished the race that she finished third, it would have been lost amidst Capecchi's celebrations. The fact that she was just recovering from the bike race and then realised and almost then secured her third place and got her spot on the podium was so beautiful. And yeah, I think that's one that will live in the memory for me, just because it reminds us what this race in particular really means, even though we're only in the fourth edition, but sort of validates as well why we need the race, why we need the TV coverage. Like you were saying earlier, Rose, about the older bike races where we don't have that coverage. For me, her name now doesn't just exist in pro cycling stats or in the records. I remember that moment. I remember the visuals of her delight. And so on a human level, that was my moment of the Cobble Classic.
I did. Like, that was on my list as well, actually, Orla, because I just thought also she really had no place ending up on the podium there amongst those other riders. I mean, with going against Capecchi and Voss and Balsamo, all these like top sprinters to come in to the velodrome, and she had to show so much daring to go early, to do something a bit different. She couldn't rely just on her sprint at the very end. So I think it kind of showed so much courage from her. And it was, I was a bit shocked when it first panned her, because she looked so crestfallen when the cameras went to her. And I was thinking, oh, Fight for Georgie must be delighted with getting a podium at Paris-Roubaix. Surely any result at Paris-Roubaix is an amazing result. So it was fantastic when that smart, she did break out into that huge smile and was just so shocked. And, you know, even on the podium, she was still, you know, seeing her team all applauding her. And they did such a great job, didn't they? DSM Firmenich. They really took the race to everyone. They didn't just sit back as if they were a small team. They really took it to everybody. Denny, I won't say what my moment was. I'll see what Denny's was first, and then I'll see what I'm going to go for. Denny, what was your moment of the Cobble Classics?
Well, mine wasn't a million miles away in that it's also focused on the velodrome. But for me, it was just that final showdown in the velodrome at Paris-Roubaix. Orla, you mentioned Jeopardy earlier, but that had Jeopardy in kind of spades, didn't it? And for me, it was like the perfect distillation of the classic season. All the threads were there, all the narratives we've been talking about. Voss's comeback and her kind of threat to win yet another big race. Lidl Trek had the numbers, just as they have had all season. They had Balsamo and Van Dijk there. You had Capecchi kind of isolated, up against the odds, having put in a kind of swashbuckling performance. And then, of course, Fight for Georgie, who we've just mentioned, and Dan Bercrack as well. But it was a really tense finale, and I thought it was just such a perfect way to end the classic season, really. And the sprint itself was just phenomenal, because I think everyone was backing either Balsamo or Voss to win that sprint. Capecchi was boxed in. We kind of talked her down a bit after a performance at Flanders. And just the way she made that late drive coming over the top to win in brilliant style in the rainbow bands, in white shorts.
Yes. So clean, though. They looked so clean.
Fantastic. Yeah. I just absolutely loved that finale. I just thought it was perfect. And, well, to cap it off, Fight for Georgie's bike throw, having put in all that energy to claw her way back to the break and get that third place, was just tremendous too.
Yeah, that was a wonderful moment. I love that idea, Denny, that you say, like, it's like a microcosm for all that happened in the Cobble Classics, kind of seeing who won out in the end. But also Lotte Capecchi coming across.
Yeah,
you can't really ever be upset when you have those rainbow bands in that iconic finish, can you? And, you know, it wasn't like she'd had it all her way either, was it? I mean, she was so disappointed after Flanders and, you know, has missed out, you know, Omloop missed out to Vos. So it wasn't like, oh, you know, here comes Capecchi and here's her guaranteed win on a plate. You know, she did. She was also having to go against the odds to an extent. I'm going to take us back a little bit for my moment of the couple classics to the Tour of Flanders, because I just, it's so stuck in my memory, that moment of Shirin van Anrooy blasting past. You know, she was behind, she was in a chasing group that had been splintered. There was a leading group with a load of the big contenders in it. You know, Vibus was there, Lisa Longo-Borghini was there, Cashin Iwadoma, Vos. And she was in a chasing group that had splintered, and Vollering had got up to this group, and kind of all the riders kind of sat up, because then SD Works again had the numbers. They had Vollering and they had Lorena Vibus, and everyone was thinking, oh, this is just going to go their way. They're going to play it so that, you know, they keep Lorena Vibus in it and Lorena Vibus can win it right at the end. So to see out, of, and it was out of nowhere, because the cameras on the motorbikes were not looking at her, not looking at Shirin van Anrooy at all. And across the other side of the road, she comes storming past, doesn't stop to try and catch any breath, to try and rest her legs. She goes straight past the other side of the road and goes on. And then, you know, that changed the whole face of that race. And I think it was just, for me, so exhilarating to see that the peloton isn't kind of trapped in this SD Works headlock, you know, that they, that there were other ways of doing things, and, you know, really exciting ways of doing things, ways that are, you know, really thrilling to watch. Orla, what did you make of that moment, and, you know, how that changed the race?
Yeah, I loved it. I just, like, I've got so much deep love for everything that Lidl Trek have been doing this season in particular, but for a long time. And I love that they are so daring and they're not stuck in this narrative of others' creation that SD Works will do X, Y, and Z, and so we must react. They take the race on, Shirin with the confidence that she has already, which is validated by her huge experience. I absolutely love the girl. I just think she's so fun to watch. You know, she races like it's an underage race with friends, even, you know, not even that it's necessarily a bike race underage. I just think she races with joy in her heart and in her pedals, and it makes it a thrill to watch. And anything involving Shirin van Anrooy, I love. My kids tend to call her Ed in our house now, Ed Shirin. They get confused.
I love that.
My favourite.
We're going to have to find a load of Ed Sheeran puns now for the next time we Shirin van Anrooy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she saw Castle on the Hill. She was racing for that, you know. but I can't think of any more now.
I can't think of a... Oh, she's part of the A team. I guess
she
you could say
the
that.
A-team.
Little
yeah,
Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Oh, is that a controversial point? Is Little Trek the A team now?
I don't know, but the graffiti on the underpass seems to suggest that they're coming for it anyway, doesn't it? But yeah, that was a wonderful moment, a wonderful moment. And Flanders was a thrill because of it, wasn't it? It was an absolute thrill of a race and a brilliant result for them. And I don't want to say it, Rose, but I will. At the end of Flanders, I mean, I said in studio, is this validation of how Lidl Trek have been riding, and the fact that we've all said genuinely that you have to be willing to lose a race in order to win it. They have. They've raced that way and they've lost that way, but they've kept doing it their way, and that's how the wins are coming, because they're not bowing to what any of us are saying for a start. They're not bowing to how SD Works are riding, and they're making it an absolute thrill. I love it.
I do think, though, to defend my point,
here we go.
I do think that we have seen a bit of an evolution of their tactics, because yes, it is the same tactics. You know, it's getting numbers up there and then, you know, trying to kind of wear everyone else out. But I do think we have seen that evolve, that they're not just making attack after attack. It's, I think, a little bit more controlled than that. I do think that has developed. I think we could see that develop from Omloop, where they were kind of both just Shirin van Anrooy and Elisa Longo-Borghini were both kind of attacking right towards that finish, and then not finishing off with the win. to then Dwarsdorf-Lande, and where again they had numbers towards the end, but this time they were kind of being, Schön van Anroy went off with Marianne Vos and Elisa Longo-Borghini kind of stayed behind. It was kind of one big move to then seeing, you know, them carry on with that at Flanders and then again, play those. So it's kind of the same tactics, but I think that they kind of learned to do that in a slightly more conservative way. Not that it looks conservative, because it looks spectacular and wonderful and exciting, and it's kind of super daring. But I do think that there has been a little bit of an evolution of tactics. I'm just please, you know, I don't want to lose all the listeners because they think the person who's presenting the podcast doesn't know what she's talking about. So I'm desperately defending myself here.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, though, I mean, I've always been talking in an overarching sense anyway. I'm not talking about the specifics of any given tactic in any given race. It's more the philosophy that comes with it. And that's this, and in that sense, we're both meaning the same thing, because what's driving them and what's motivating whatever the tactics are is that we're going to niggle them. We're going to annoy the hell out of them. We're going to be there. We're going to keep being there. We're going to frustrate them. And we're going to race our own race, you know? So it's just being brave enough and confident enough in their own cohesion and their own abilities to take the race on, you know? And sometimes that'll work and sometimes it won't. But the philosophy remains the same. We're still in it. We're still in the race. We're going to still fight for it. And we're going to frustrate SD Works because we're not going to back down.
No, that's very true. And it has been so dynamic. And it's kind of, you know, we've always seen other teams that aren't SD Works ride so defensively sometimes to try and get the win.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see them kind of go in the offensive. And it is working. It's certainly working. Well, why don't we move on to our hero of the cobbles, Denny. Who's your hero? There's been so many names out there, super domestiques, obviously incredible champions, and also some young stars. So I'm interested to know what you're going to go for, Denny.
Continuing the theme, I guess, of fearlessness and willingness to attack, my hero has been Puk Pietersen, just because she has just thrown everything at every race she's been at. She's, well, much like Schön van Anroy, actually. She's just had that willingness to attack like a junior. A little bit of naivety in some ways, but she's really animated the races. And I think that's maybe helped Lidl Trek in a way. I think the more riders we have in races that are willing just to you know, throw themselves at races, put in attacks when you're least expecting it, take the race to SD Works, the more exciting the races become, the less predictable they are. And I think she's been a revelation in that sense, and I'm really glad that she decided to extend her road season. I know she's obviously, we've talked about it in the podcast already, but she's obviously got the Olympics in mind with mountain biking, but to have her there all the way through the classic seasons pretty much has been an absolute joy to watch, and I'm really excited to see how she gets on next year as well, because she's been such a brilliant addition to the classics.
Yeah, you are right. And then it is also that naivety or you know, quite the element of the unknown. Obviously, we did see her in the classic season last year, but there is an element of unknown for the other riders that they can't trust that if they let her go that she won't stay away and that they can't predict where she's going to attack. Obviously, a team like Fenix de Koenig, as we saw at the Tour de France FAM last year, they're so attacking, and you know they're willing to do things and go for moves that other teams wouldn't do or wouldn't think would be the usual way of doing things. I was going to mention actually her teammate Christina Schweinberger, who I think was also so instrumental in helping Puk Pietersen, but also just you know animating the races, changing the way the races play out. Because I mean Schweinberger only had her first full year in cycling last year, which is quite incredible. And to see her come and, you know, be at the pointy end of these races, you know, we saw her right at the front at Paris-Roubaix. And for a rider who's quite new to the sport and for a team that's also kind of a young gun kind of team, I think it was really, really impressive from them. Orla, who was your hero of the cobbles? If you could pick just one.
You preempted me already.
Yes, I know.
It's so hard. I actually wanted to go really obvious. and go like Lotta for overcoming disappointment and finishing the Cobble Classics with a win. I wanted to go Mariana for managing to win races that she's not won before after all of this time. I wanted to go Ellen Van Dijk. I'm doing it, you see, I'm giving you the option. I wanted to go Ellen Van Dijk because of her magnificence in coming back from growing a human being inside of her and getting that human being out and the exhaustion that comes with that. And the work that she did at Paris-Roubaix and still to finish sixth was just, it was bestial. It was amazing. But I'm going to go for Cassia Nieuwiedoma as my hero because her devastation at finishing fourth again at Strade Bianche was absolutely heartbreaking. It's clearly a race that she loves so much and she pours her entire heart and soul and every fibre of her being into that race. So to see her so disappointed, I was so disappointed in her behalf. And then to finish second at Flanders, I thought was just amazing. And not just the second place finish, it was her attitude to it, you know, because she was delighted with her finish and her result and clearly must have faced some sort of questioning or criticism in some way on social media because she then defended her delight in social media later that week, which just tells you everything you need to know about social media and people who will never know what it's like to finish second at the Tour of France. Her point was, I can come away from this one of two ways. I can take this experience in one of two ways. I can be disappointed or I can choose to be delighted with it and to have that my experience of finishing on the podium at Flanders. And I thought it was quite philosophical, spiritual almost, meditative in terms of, you know, that sort of mindful awareness of your experience as you're going through life. And it was just really positive, you know, it was just really nice. And it was lovely to see her second place finish anyway. But then her grace in having to defend her delight at podiuming, sorry to use that as a verb, but I just have, at a bike race so brutally difficult as the Tour of Flanders, made her really stand out for me. And the result will propel her towards the Ardennes Classics with a lot of confidence. And I'm hoping that we'll get to see her not having to defend delight because she's on the top step of the podium. But for those reasons, I say Cassia Nieuwiedoma because that it was beautiful to see.
I love that, Orla, because I'd actually totally forgotten, you know, that moment. And it was, you know, so thrilling for her as well, especially as a rider who, you know, she's been criticised that she kind of does a lot of crazy moves and wastes a lot of energy and then doesn't really, you know, have it at the finish. She kind of, what I liked was that she got her second place, but that was through doing a bit of a kind of crazy move. You know, she did just, you know, light it up on the Partisberg and, you know, it was just her and Elisa Longo-Borghini behind Sheeran Van Aanroy who made it to the top there. And so it was kind of nice to see how, and you know, and I think I've criticised her certainly for doing that in the past, but it's kind of nice to see that she can get results on her own terms. You know, she can do that, those kind of crazy, exciting moves that we don't want her to not do because it makes it so thrilling, but she can do that and it can, you know, give her results, which I think is really beautiful thing. Now, I should say my hero actually was Letizia Paternoster.
Oh, because very good.
She really was fantastic over the Cobble Classic. I mean, and her results, when you look at them on paper, you know, she got third in Doise, which is fantastic, and she was also delighted with that. The Ronde van Vlaanderen, she finished ninth and 21st in Paris-Roubaix, 21st in Gent-Wevelgem. They're not like these super headline results, but I think what is so beautiful about it is to see that she's a Livaluula Jayco rider and they really, you know, she really is out there on her own. She doesn't have a big team backing. They don't have the team tactics to kind of get her into the right position, but she was still getting into those positions. And then like in Doise or Vlaanderen, out sprinting Lotta Kopecky at the end. And I think it's just one of those fantastic things. She was a great junior rider. She was European champ as a junior. And to finally see that she is now getting results at the elite level, it can take longer for the female riders because we don't have this under 23 kind of bracket to kind of help riders get the experience and move on up. So I think it was really fantastic to see her arrival and see her arriving at the Cobble Classics which I think is not where you would necessarily expect her to see her. You know, you would expect to see her in a sprint, you know, winning sprints or getting better at sprinting. So I think it was kind of surprising and delightful to see Letizia Paternoster up there. And it's exciting to see what she might do next because, you know, she has so much potential. She is only 24 years old. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see what comes next. I've probably ruined my own next category for some people, which was the surprise of the cobbles. Denny, what was your surprise of the cobbles? And I know probably going to end up almost crossing over, overlapping with kind of things that we've already mentioned and riders we've already mentioned. But yeah, Denny, what was your big surprise?
Well, I think my big surprise was Kimberly LeCourt, or Kimberly LeCourt Pienaar, as I think she's now known after getting married over the winter. But she's a rider I didn't know huge amounts about before this season, a 28-year-old from Mauritius. But she finished 11th in Binder, 9th in Brugge de Panne, 13th in Gent-Wevelgem, 23rd in Flanders, and 10th in Paris-Roubaix. And I think she's relatively new to the road. She was only signed by the AG Insurance Soudal team midway through last season after the Worlds. And she, well, their website says she was recruited primarily as a domestique. But I think those results have proven that she's anything but a domestique, or she should be going forward. She dallied with road racing when she came out of the juniors back in 2015 and 2016. But since then, she's really been focused on mountain biking. And she raced the Worlds, from what I understand, in Glasgow, the road Worlds, only because she was there for the mountain biking and she thought she might as well give it a go. But after that, she started contacting teams and AG Insurance gave her a chance. So this season was her her first full-time kind of road season, really, for quite a number of years. So she's still learning. She's still adjusting to riding in a bunch. She's riding these races for the first time in many cases, Paris-Roubaix, Flanders, and so on. So I think her results, with that context in mind, have just been phenomenal. And, you know, with a full road racing season under her belt this year, she could be a real contender next time around in the Classic. So I think she's definitely a real surprise package for me.
I think that's an excellent shout, actually, Denny. Really strong and a really great name to be watching out for. Confusing as well with the bands on her sleeve, don't you think?
Yeah, it
yes.
is.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Which ones did she win? Oh, it's the Marine flag. Always catches the eye. My surprise, I'm going to go with a theme, and we've covered it already, really, but I've been really pleasantly surprised, sorry SD Works, but that SD Works have not completely strangled the start of the season, because I was really afraid at the start when we were looking at the UAE tour. I thought this could be a terrible advert for women's cycling in Olympic year when we get more eyes on the sport. And I couldn't really see very many ways in which they could be beaten. So even though I'm going to maybe contradict myself ever so slightly, Rose, and back you up in that.
yes!
Well, only because I am definitely a glass half full kind of person. And so Omloop, I'm saying, yeah, absolutely, Lidl Trek, brilliant. However, my fear was they are racing on their terms and they're still not winning. So when will the wins come for anybody else? And Lidl Trek being, even though Omloop was won by Marianne Vos, obviously, but Lidl Trek, for my money, are the greatest contenders to that throne. And you don't want them to be discouraged. But anyway, I just feared that SD Works would completely throttle all of this. Between Lotta, between Lorena and Damie, I just couldn't see a race that they wouldn't win, you know, that they wouldn't. And not just win, but like last season when we're seeing 1-2s or, you know, a few of them on the podium. And that was not something that was filling me with an awful lot of excitement, I've got to be honest. So my surprise is that they haven't dominated, but brilliantly for them, they are still winning, you know, and Lotta taking Paris-Roubaix means that you don't want to kick the supreme team in the world and wish for a fall from grace for them. You just want a bit more competition, and I think that's what we've got. So it's been a pleasant surprise for me to see that SD Works haven't completely killed off our Commonwealth Classic season, and that it's been a thrill because of it.
Yeah, no, actually, all of that exact point was on my list of surprises because, you know, if we take ourselves back a few months, we were definitely coming into this season, you know, asking that eternal question of how you beat SD Works because they have such strength and depth and they seem to every year, you know, in the transfer market just bolster that. And then, they bring on stronger riders and it's actually really hard to pick out SD Works in the bunch, isn't it? Because they have so many national jerseys and world champ jerseys that already, you know, when you have a quick snapshot of a bunch of riders, you think, oh, I can't see many SD Works riders there. But actually they're all there, all in their national colours. And so I think I was really worried as well and, you know, saw kind of in, even starting with kind of Strada Bianchi, just thinking, I don't understand. I don't know how anyone else is gonna win here outside of SD Works. So I was also really delighted. But I do say that, but when I was actually looking at last season's wins and this season's wins, I did think, I think last year, the thing that really made the difference was the Ardennes Classics, which obviously is still to come. And that Vollering triple, I think
there's
really...
There's room for depression yet.
Yeah, you know, just keeping your feet on the ground, Orla. But no, I did think that maybe those that triple crown from Demi Vollering. I actually think that that it will give such a confidence boost to the other teams going into the Ardennes Classics. And there's so many of these kind of Lone Ranger type riders that also have great potential to do something, that I think that they're definitely going into the Ardennes Classic with a much kind of weaker morale, perhaps. You know, they definitely got to be questioning when they're in that kind of reduced group, can I actually out-sprint Marianne Vos, or can I actually out-sprint Elisa Balsamo, and will actually Balsamo get over these climbs now? There's a lot of question marks for them now, which I don't think was there before.
And I'm going to make a prediction now that I will regret, possibly. But they're not going to win all the Ardennes Classics, and Cassie is going to win one.
Ooh, well, I would love to win one.
I believe she will. I believe she's got the right mindset. She's still attacking as she always has. She's got the confidence and the hunger.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say Cassie's gonna win an Ardennes Classic.
Oh, I like that. And you know, we know also that Cassie's been building on kind of getting slightly more endurance as well, which I think is kind of, you know, what sometimes goes wrong for her in those Ardennes Classics. She has that firepower but then can't quite sustain it. So yes, I think that's a perfect way of kind of making everyone excited for the Ardennes Classics. My surprise was actually going to be, and I know this is going to sound ridiculous because, you know, the greatest of all time is never a surprise, but Marianne Vos, she does continue to surprise, doesn't she? We, in Omloop particularly, beginning of the season, bearing in mind the surgery, the iliac artery surgery that she had last season, to come out just all guns blazing in that early Omloop race and win, out-sprint the rider of the moment, that was Lotta Kopecky, and then just continue to build on that. She's just phenomenal. I mean, I did mention that in our feature, it's 20 years of Flanders, but it's also 20 years of Marianne Vos, you know, that, which is crazy. She started her bike 2004, you know, racing competitively in 2004. So 20 years on to still be getting results, to still be also someone that people really fear, like in those groups. Mm. The riders, when they see that Marianne Vos is there, they don't want to do any work because they don't want to go to the line with Marianne Vos. To still have that legacy is just phenomenal. And obviously it just makes you excited for the rest of the season, doesn't it? If Marianne Vos is back to her best, then yeah, that gives you a full, you know, that's not just one part of the season that you can be scared of, it's the full season.
Can I just say, though, can I just take a moment to reflect on how bonkers that is? 20 years. Can you think what were you doing 20 years ago, right? No need to answer. Just have a think. What were you doing 20 years ago? Because for me, I've not been smashing life for 20 years.
No, yeah.
20 years of a career of winning.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, her prowess, her proliferation of wins didn't start right in 2004, but not that long after. I've not been at the top of my game for 20 years. How did she do that? I was a kid.
I know, it's crazy. And you know, we will come on to, you know, the Flanders piece from 2004. People can't even remember, you know, what happened in 2004. It is such a distant kind of memory. So it's phenomenal that she's been on the top of her game since then and continues to. That's what's so exciting, is there's so many kind of almost false finishes for Marina Voss where you think, oh, she's had this surgery or that surgery, or, you know, she's injured or ill, and you think that's going to be the end of her career. I know that we, you know, years ago, Orla, I was listening to me, you and Richard talking in back in, it must have been kind of 2016, 2017 kind of time, saying, you know, is that how we finally seen the best of Marina Voss and that's the end? You know, she doesn't seem to be able to come back from a knee injury then. But and we were kind of like, oh, you know, but what a great career. And, you know, and now it's, you know, so much further on from that, and she's still going strong. Orla is in complete shock. Can I just say, Orla is just in total shock.
context of 20 years of Marina Voss, and you were saying 20 years of the Tour of Flanders. I thought, oh, that's great. We've got history in the race.
Yeah.
You
know, Marina Voss is the history. Yeah.
You know, that's made me look now, because I'm thinking, well, she obviously wasn't winning right from the very beginning. And, you know, the 2008 Olympics were huge for her. 2004, she won the World Juniors road race.
Wow.
2006, she won the seniors. Right. Yeah. I feel like I've wasted a good chunk of the last 20 years, and you think that Marianne Vos is still winning the biggest bike races in the world and still surprising us, still current, but still more to offer.
Yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah. I might go back to bed.
I love when we've gone from this like positive optimism, and now it's just like, oh, what's the point? We can never be as good as Marianne Vos.
I'm going to make my next 20 years really special. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no one knows when their 20 year reign at the top begins. So that's what I'm going to go for. Maybe I'll give myself
2024 marks the beginning of my 20 year reign of excellence.
I'll give myself another 10 years of slubbing about, and then I'll really go for it.
Yeah, I don't have time to waste anymore, Rose. I got to crack on with magnificence.
Well, that is actually the perfect little segue to move into the mini feature that we have this month, which is about the 20 years of Flanders. Well, not specifically about the, you know, the whole history of it, but what the race was like right in those early editions when it was first created back in 2004. Well, you'll hear how different racing and women's racing, particularly, I should say, was, and how far we've come.
I had asked Jean-Marie Leblanc if ASO would put on a Paris-Roubaix for us, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack. You know, he just sort of, excuse me, what was that you just asked? And I said, look, you know, we can ride the pavés fine. I mean, there's no problem. And he just said, no, it's not going to happen.
20 years ago, women's cycling didn't look how it does today. Most of the races that we see now as the pinnacles of the sport didn't even exist. And as former rider Marion Clinier attested, in some cases, the idea that they ever would appeared fanciful. The Women's Tour of Flanders had its first edition in 2004, almost a century after the men had theirs. Journalist Breck de Calloway.
The cultural significance is bigger than the race. The day of the Ronde was sacred. It's a massive thing. Just like Paris-Roubaix now, everybody's very happy and there's a women's edition and keen to race it, and then finding out it's indeed very hard and brutal.
Yeah, we were super excited. I mean, I was excited. I was just thrilled, and we didn't have special anything. We just went out and did it. I mean, and that was, you know, for the most part, most of our career, we were lucky to have dialed in TT bikes if we did, and that wasn't the case for everyone. But yeah, it was full on. I mean, we were all super excited to have that race.
Alongside experienced hands like Marion Clinier were a host of riders for whom the cobbles were a baptism of fire, like Giorgia Bronzini, who was only 20 years old.
What I remember was a really big shock. For me to get in this bumpy road and dirty, and what I remember, the bike setting was completely wrong for tires wise, pump the tires. We didn't have any clue. And I remember that I get the first time to the gabus, I was jumping left and right. I was thinking, okay, the tire is too pounded, and then I stop and I take out air, and just I do myself, because otherwise I could not even ride.
Among the trade teams in 2004 were also 10 national teams. The Australian team even boasted the World Cup leader at the time, Inoni Wood.
Like, I came overseas the first time in 2002. So that was, I was just super, super green. Flanders was the most stressful race. It was really exciting, but so stressful. I had the, like, the World Cup jersey at the time. Just through the race, I had a mechanical issue and needed to have a like a bike change, and one of my teammates, Nat Bates, stopped at the side of the road, and because it was Flanders, she gave me her bike to ride. But I was probably one of the shortest people in the peloton. She rode a 54 and I would ride like a 47. There was just, I just couldn't fit it at all, but I had to ride it because I had no choice. I'm riding along, but of course I can't sit on the saddle. I'm in the leader's jersey, and of course it's really important. So the Australian support car was nowhere to be seen. And instead the German national coach actually came screaming up behind me in their team car. And like, I was really new to racing, very, very green. And so Flanders was terrifying to race anyway. But if you can imagine the mechanic hanging out of the window and adjusting the seat height while we're going, and we're going through like roundabouts and, you know, like all the road obstacles in Flanders, and it was just absolutely terrifying. But I did survive and I finished the race, so I was quite happy with that.
The inaugural Flanders was also an eventful one for Marion Clinier.
I do remember, though, riding up one of the steeper parts of Flanders. I think it was the last steep cobble before the finish, and there were a bunch of spectators drinking beer on the left, and somehow one of the spectators was bringing his beer up to his lips and hooked through my handlebars and pulled me off the bike. So crashed, got up, and, you know, smelled like beer, because obviously I got beer all over me. They just tried to help and push me back on, and then, you know, I was in the front at that point, and then lost contact with that front group and made it into the big group behind. I still see that incident, you know, happening, and it was like, how did shit like that even happen? I was, it was a mix at the finish between massive frustration because I was having a great day and up front, and, you know, what if?
Even the most absurd race-altering events such as this weren't captured by the cameras.
For the men's races, you got plenty of reports, got video footage. But for the women's race, I remember standing there at the finish every time, and you had absolutely no idea what had happened. So the race report was created with the quotes, and then you start building up what probably happened in the race. So I can imagine that a race report from Cycling News, if a rider who was there reads it, says, well, that's not what happened. That's quite possible.
One thing that we can be sure of was that the race was won by the enigmatic Zofia Zabirova.
Very smooth on a bike, had a beautiful pedal stroke, was a beautiful girl. I think she wanted to be a fashion model more than she wanted to be a bike racer, but she really had talent.
Flanders is always chaos, but 2005 ended in farce. While a break of two continued up the road, the chasers behind were led off the course by a race official. In the group were Inoni Wood, who would end up losing her World Cup leader's jersey, and Lois Hanawick, who had eyes on the podium.
The motorcycle in front of us went to the deviation for the motors too early. That way was coming from behind the finish line. So that was a little bit crazy. So we all got DNF behind our names, and instead of UCI points and a good result in Flanders, we had nothing, or I had nothing. It was just such a debacle.
like, it was kind of like, how could you have even made this mistake? It's ridiculous. How can you not know the finish? And the race organisers were sort of coming back to us and saying, you know, you should know what the finish of the race is.
When we took the turn, I was like, I'm not sure if this is right, but yeah, what do? You're in a group, everybody goes to the right.
And everyone's kind of starting to look at each other going like, what's going on? And it certainly took us on a little bit of a lap and brought us back onto the course. But by then, we all knew that the race was over. And I was really nervous because of the points for the World Cup.
So yeah, I was pretty confused and also angry because I'm frustrated because I really had good legs. I think I could go for a good, really good result, maybe the third spot on the podium. And now you have nothing. I learned from it, like, we did a recon with our team, but we skipped after the Bosberg, the recon, so, okay, we've seen now everything. If you do a recon, you have to do it good or don't do it. That's after that, I said to the team, okay, we're never going to do half of it anymore, or short, not seeing the finish or whatever.
Lois Honnewick finally got the podium she was looking for the following year, in 2006, with teammate Miriam Melkers taking her second win in a row.
It was my first year with Flexpoint. That was really a big team. And I remember the day before we had the team talk and like we had four riders who could win that race. And our sport director said like, yeah, you have to decide tomorrow and make the decision who has the best legs and who can go for the win. And Miriam was in front with Suda, I think, the Austrian girl. And I was in a group behind with Lunchkoch, also my teammate. And we were covering the attacks. And then I was in front with, she was from Russia, or the East Bloc. And I beat her in the sprint because I didn't have to do anything for... Yeah, I had a teammate in front, so I could just sit in her wheel in the final. And it was just after the Bosberg, and I really loved that race. No, I have a picture from my third spot on the finish line, and yeah, the whole tribune is empty. So not that much spectators.
All these years on, riders now get to enjoy racing with crowds, live coverage, and the basic infrastructure that should underpin any sport. Marion Clignier again.
I would love to race in today's peloton. I mean, it's just so exciting. You know, it's a whole different... It's what we dreamed of.
Perhaps, though, through all the years of the Tour of Flanders, the key to success never changes.
But I think one of the best Flanders that I rided, and as a memory, was the one that Lungo Borghini won and Julien getting the podium. And I was rooming with Elisa. And I remember that she was a bit, of course, stressed, Lungo, no? Then I said, okay, before to go to bed, take a piece of this. And I give her chocolate, like a piece of chocolate. To my teammate, and we just drink tea together and a bit of chocolate, and we go to bed. And Elisa always remembered that what was her like tools for winning Flanders, and she always says, Georgia just gave me a chocolate the night before.
Well, that was number four? Fourth mini feature of the year about the 20 years of Flanders. And it just gave me such an appreciation working on this. I mean, it was so difficult to try and find the information about these races and even the riders because, you know, in the men's side of things, you know all the names of these riders because the riders become DSs or they, you know, become ambassadors for bike brands. But, you know, the female riders, they just leave the sport and they go off and do totally unrelated things. And, you know, it's very hard to track them down. But it did give me such an appreciation for the fact that we do have coverage now. We do have live coverage. We do have proper media coverage. You know, we have media outlets that are properly giving attention to the women's racing. And, you don't want to be like, oh, thank you so much, because, you know, the female riders make it exciting, make it worth watching. And, you know, I just think it was such a surprising thing that 20 years ago is not, it's not really that far ago. I mean, it is a long term in terms of Marianne Vos's career, but it's not really that long ago. And to have had gone from having absolutely nothing to having the coverage and creating those images and those memories for future generations, I think it's also key. Orla, I know obviously you've been so passionate about getting full coverage, getting longer coverage. But, you know, it's great to see how far we've come. But we do, you know, there is still more room for growth, isn't there?
There always is. There always is. But what's really good now is that we do have people in positions of power who want it to be better. You know, I mean, we were discussing Pirate Bay at the weekend, obviously. And if you look back to the first Pirate Bay where Lizzie Deignan won, she made her winning move before her front wheel even touched the cobbles. Now, at the time, the race organisers were not giving us pictures, live pictures, frankly, any pictures, of the first time that the women's race was going to hit the first cobbles of Pirate Bay, a huge moment in this sport's magnificent history. So Eurosport sent their own cameras to the start of that cobble section to be able to capture that moment, not knowing, of course, that that was going to be the race-winning move. And so if we'd waited until the live pictures, it would have looked like an incredibly dull race, really, and you wouldn't have seen all of that drama. So my point is that there are people who are working hard. We have, you know, full credit to the race organisers for giving us the pictures that they do, because this is all really expensive, and also for putting the race on. I think it's important that we don't always moan about these things, but that we have people who are looking at that and thinking, okay, well, that's still not enough, and so we're going to spend more money doing this. And the viewers at home, to be honest about that race, will still sit there and say, why do we not have full coverage? This is ridiculous. Rather than looking at the will behind getting what we've got already. And that was because of people within that company in particular wanting to go over and above and beyond to make sure that we are doing justice to as much of that history as we possibly can. And what's important is that that is all being rewarded in return with viewing figures, with social media hits. You know, these things, I keep saying, they're measured. If you see a social media hit that's discussing women's racing, click on it, like it, share it. These things are measured. They will give you more of what is popular. And so we have this better symbiotic relationship right now whereby people want to give more coverage if they can, and people are then lapping up that coverage and feeding into the demand. It's only getting better. And I understand anyone's frustration whenever we don't have live coverage of races start to finish, but it's getting better. Keep shouting, absolutely, but be proactive. Click on these things, watch these things, share these things, because that's how we will get more. You have to prove that there's an audience hunger for this. The more we do that, it makes business sense for people to provide it. So it's all positive in my mind. And yeah, more needs to be done. More is being done. More will be done. But aren't we lucky that we've got this far, at least?
Yeah. It shows just what the importance of creating that virtuous circle. And it needs those first movers to do that, doesn't it? But because once you have the coverage, once you build up the fan base, once you have the social media clicks, then you start attracting more sponsorship. You get more investment in sport. The sport grows and it hopefully kind of progresses from there. And I think for me, there are real parallels with the domestic cycling scene here in the UK, which we cover at the British Continental, because there's no coverage of the National Road Series races on TV and very little on social media. And people are bemoaning the kind of the lack of sponsorship and investment in the sport. But you can see there we've got a vicious cycle almost. It's the opposite. So that those first movers are so important. And I'm also really grateful to you, Rose, for kind of going back to the beginning of Flanders and you describing the fact that the journalists there really, you know, had to just ask riders what happened to find out what happened, because there was no TV coverage, there's no radio coverage, there's no other way of finding out. And I know what that's like, because I have to do that when I cover the British races. You know, hit someone up on Instagram, which of course didn't exist in those days, and say, can you tell me what happened at the race? But as you were saying off air, you know, sometimes you get the race reporting wrong, but digging up those stories is so important, because we romanticize about Paris-Roubaix, we romanticize about Flanders because of the rich history, the heritage, the stories that we've been able to tell about the men's side of the sport. But we need those stories on the women's side. We need them to make them. We need to make them more prevalent, because that's how we create the romance about the sport. That's how we kind of yearn for kind of the past showdowns and create the great figures, the stars of cycling. So it's great that you've done that, Rose, and hopefully we can do more of that.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think it's so valuable, and for me, it's just kind of so so crazy, because you love these races because they're going across the same cobbles that they've kind of done for 100 years, and you remember when Fabian Cancellara attacked there and Tom Bonan attacked there, and going back even further in history, Brika Schotter going at that point. And that's kind of what is so integral to the beauty of cycling, is that history, is that the fact that we're doing these races that people wouldn't invent now. They could only have been invented, 100 years ago. So trying to create that for women's cycling and, also just make heroes of these women who, people didn't turn up for at the time, that if they had been born 20 years later, then they would be in this current crop and be getting a lot more plaudits, and there'll be rumours of, million-pound contracts, which is, the situation that we've got, now. But also, it's great that we are living in a time of really thrilling women's cycling, and long may that continue. And that's going to continue almost immediately with the Ardennes Classics, which we've already kind of briefly touched upon, which is always a thriller. And yes, will Vollering do her triple crown again? Well, Orla doesn't think so. That's what we know for sure. But thank you very much, both of you, for joining me to go back over all these cobbled classics. Orla, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And look forward to having you back on soon. And Denny, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you. And can I just say, I hope there's a camera on Orla's face at the end of every Ardennes Classics, because I want to see what it looks like when Nivea Doma finally gets her victory.
I love that. Orla Cam. Yes.
You'll
Who
have
do we need to bribe at the studio for that?
I'll be passed out with delight. Hand down, studio floor.
Well, will Orla's dreams come true? We shall have to wait and find out. Not long to wait. But thank you both, and thank you, listeners, as always.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.